Read that for me.
And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God.
All right. And I heard a voice or a sound. It's a sound great. A great sound. Out of the throne. This is the throne of what? The throne of God. All right. The very throne of God saying, you behold now, Edu, the tabernacle, the dwelling place. All right. The dwelling place. Hei skine. That word is the tent. Our dwelling place. Turn to John 1 and 4. John 1 and 4. The Gospel according to John, Kata Iwane, 1 and verse 4. Anyone over there? You over there yet, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, John 1, 4.
In him was life, and the life was the light of men.
All right, keep on going there a little bit.
And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it.
Okay.
There came a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came for a witness, that he might bear witness of the light, that all might believe through it.
Who is this light? Who is this? This is the Lord. This is Jehovah that's talking about, okay? Now, John 1:14, the conclusion of all of this. John 1:14, are you over there, Serena? All right. It says in there in Greek, it's Kaihologos Arxakenito, and the Word, the Jehovah, that's who it's talking about. The Old Testament name for God was Jehovah. All right. No one ever spoke that name. The Word, Jehovah, became flesh, and he dwelt for himself among us. And the word dwelt there means pitched his tent. That means to pitch his tent. That's the very word right here. All right? The tabernacle of God, all right, is with the mankind. Anthropon. That's the word, anthropon. And he shall dwell, John 1:14 still, he shall dwell with them, and they, the ones peoples of him, they shall be with him, with the God of them, and he shall be to them a God. All right, that's very beautiful, isn't it? This is when God wants to dwell with these people, and here is the final culmination of it. Up here on the, look at here. Here we have a new heaven and new earth taking place. We have God dwelling with these people. We have New Jerusalem coming down to earth. We're going to see the dimensions of New Jerusalem in just a little while, in just a few verses. All right, 21 and verse number 4 now, Brother David. 21 verse number 4. 21 verse 4. You want to?
Go ahead.
Okay, Mike, are you there? 21 verse 4.
And it shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death, there shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away.
All right. It said he's going to wipe away each tear. Every each tear. He's going to wipe away each tear. All right. Out of the eyes of them, out of the ophthalmon. All right, ophthalmon. You know what ophthalmologist is? That's where that comes from, the Greek word ophthalmon. The ophthalmon of them and the death, not it shall be any longer. Not only that, there's going to be no more penthos, no more sorrow, nor crying, krage, no more crying, nor pain. Look at this. How many of you had? Oh, you young people, this leaves you out probably. Anybody have any of you old codgers have any pain today? Oh, hell. It's just, you know, every morning about 4 o'clock in the morning, my pain runs me out of the bed. I stayed there as long as I can stay, and I got to get up. It just runs you out. Pain. I'll be glad to lay that down just and That's one thing I'm going to be happy to get rid of. No more crying, no more pain. No more ponos, and not shall be any longer. For the first things have passed away. Yes, brother.
So that means there will be no feelings?
Oh, we're going to feel.
So we're gonna
we'll feel, we'll have emotions, we'll have memories, we'll be able to learn all of that stuff, but we're just not going to have any. We're going to have tangible bodies. Okay? But our bodies are beyond pain, beyond suffering, beyond hunger, beyond weariness. You ever get tired?
So happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Happiness,
yes. Happiness all the time. How would you like to be happy all the time? No more worries. No more pain. All right? Happiness. Isaiah 25:8, 35:10, 51:11, 65:19, 1 Corinthians 15:26, 2 Corinthians 5:17, Hebrews 12:27, Revelation 7:17, and 20 and 14. These are cross references to this one. Okay? All the things, the first things have passed away. The first things in the... Well, what are the first things? We live over here, don't we? We're not going to take any of this here. We're not going to take any of the pain over into here. All right? Thank you. We're not going to take any of our pain into that period of time. When we go before the judgment seat of Christ, some of us will be sorry for what we haven't done for the Lord in this life. There will be some regret and things like that. But now in this eternal age, there's not going to be any, no more tears, no more pain, no more suffering, nothing. It's all over with. That's all behind. Those were the things that took place over here. Over here in the future ages is going to be bliss. All right? Bliss and wonder and beauty. Won't be limping anymore. We'll be smiling. Won't have to worry about going out in the hot sun in a suit out there on that location. Brother Mike came to my house the other day. We went out shooting, did something the other day. And he said, you know, it's not too bad. I'm not in some what?
Plastic.
A plastic suit. Standing out here in 110 degree. You stand out there in 110 degree sun with a plastic suit on, it's twice that hot. They don't have air conditioners in those suits either, do they? Don't have to worry about doing that again. Yeah, a space suit with air conditioning. 21 and verse 5. 21 and verse 5. Brother John, it's good to have you here. 21 and verse 5. Would you read that for me, please, brother?
And he who sits on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. And he said, write, for these words are faithful and true.
All right. The one that's sitting on the throne. The one that's sitting upon the throne. The thronos. Look at that word throno there. That's exactly the same word that we have in English, sonu. All right. The one sitting, he said, behold, I make. All right. I make. Things new, kine. That word new, it means in quality. He refreshes it. In Revelation. Now, he is not going to make a totally different new heavens and a new earth. He's going to take the old one and make it pure. He's going to purify it, okay? Just like you purify gold and silver, you get all the dross, scrape it all off the top. That's exactly what it's going to. We're going to have the same elements that we are here, but without sin, without tarnish, without any of that. Back in Genesis, the first chapter, it says, Barashith bara, it said, in beginnings, in one of the beginnings, created. That word created is in perfect tense. It's finished. It says in Hebrew, in beginnings, created and finished, God, the heavens. The whole universe, He placed the whole universe in existence. It finished. It's a final product. Okay, it's done. It has been created now. Not the Jewish idea of a creating a chaos and then bringing it into order, but He created this perfect universe, and then He placed the earth in exactly the right place. It says, Viharis, and the earth. All right? And then it says, in the earth she became formless and void. She became. The word became means to change from one state to the other. The state of perfectness, the state of perfection, changed to disorder. Then God refreshed, rebuilt all of the heavens and the earth. He caused the sun to shine again. He caused the sea to get back into order again. The animals, he caused the earth to sprout forth. There was already seeds and already trees in the earth, but he called forth them to spring forth. And then it said, and from the waters came life. He talks about all this, but this was a rebuilding. He rebuilt it, and it was a paradise. Okay? And then God said he planted a garden east of the earth. Okay? In the east of the earth. And we know that as the Garden of Eden. And God built this garden. How would you like to walk into a paradise that God made with his hands? We're going to do it one of these days again. Now, Adam walked into it. And of course, Adam blew it. You know, I mean, he just really went away. And then back over here now, after the earth has been contaminated. Now, he did away with all life here in the flood, all breathing things that lived upon ground. All of them were killed. The fish didn't all die. Probably a lot of the beaver and different things like that, they didn't have to go on the ark. But the seals, of course, and you know, different kinds of birds that can fly and land on water, they probably didn't have to go into the ark. But he killed off all life on the earth. And then man repopulated. Noah's sons repopulated the earth. Now we come down through here all this period of time. We have the earth divided over here. God divided the earth. Why did God divide the earth and confound the languages? Remember? To slow down.
Why did people spread out rural?
Well, they built a city. He said, spread out, and they built a city called Babel. They built a tower, and they had a one world religion, and they started a false religion. So God confused them so they couldn't. It says, God said, they will do anything that they want to, and they will make a mess out of things again. So he divided the earth, and he confused the languages to slow them down. It was a deterrent to crime, so to speak. Okay? And we have God judging in different ways down through the period of time. And then we come over here to the eternal ages. God rebuilds the earth again. He refreshes it. He purifies it. And this time, there is no sin in it. He doesn't let sin contaminate his earth. Because this is his forever. It's his marriage of his creation to himself. You remember when you got married? Nice, huh? Beautiful. It's going to be like that. This is the way God is going to be married to his whole creation. He is just, it's going to be bliss. Just like a forever honeymoon with his creation. All right. 21 in verse 6. 21 and verse 6 now. 21:6. Brother Rex, are you going to go do? I'll get somebody else in. Are you going to do it? 21 and verse 6.
Then he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of the water of life without cost.
All right. Now here we are again. And he said to me, this messenger said to me, it has occurred. That's what it literally says. It has occurred, or it has begun, or it has came into existence. All right. Everything, now it's all taken place. Then he said, I am, ego eimi. Exodus 3:14. This is basically a quotation from the Old Testament, isn't it? And Jesus quoted it again in the New Testament when he told them who he was. Exodus 3:14. Where's Exodus 3:14? You're all, who's over there? Anybody? Exodus 3:14. Are you over there, Serena?
Yes. God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent you.
All right, here is the great I am. This is one that spoke to Moses in the burning bush. All right? In the New Testament, Jesus was talking to the Pharisees and everything else, and they were griping with him, and they said, well, who are you? You say you're older than Moses? You're older than Abraham? He said, Abraham was glad to see my day. And they said, you're not 50 years old. You say you know Abraham? And then he makes this one little statement. Before Abraham was, I am. And boy, they got mad and they were going to stone him for blasphemy. Because you know what? Before Abraham was, he existed the ever-existing one. And God told Moses, now Moses is after Abraham, of course. You know, as you look up on here, here's Abraham way back over here. And then here's Moses over here. But the great I am that spoke to Abraham and appeared to Abraham was the same I am that spoke to Moses. And he said, all right, before Abraham was, I am the eternal one, I am. And who did God say that he was to Moses? I am the eternal one. Okay? In John 1:1. What is the oldest verse as far as history goes in time? What is the oldest verse in the Bible? One that goes back further than any other period of time in the Bible. What? Job is one of the oldest books in the Bible. Probably the oldest book. What is the oldest verse in the Bible? John 1:1. John 1:1. We quoted this already today. This is the oldest verse in the Bible. This goes back further than anything else. Marilyn, where are you? There you are. This is the oldest verse in the Bible. It goes back further than anything. In beginning. All right, this is the absolute beginning. It's locative, singular, feminine. That's what that means. Singular is singular, isn't it? In Genesis, it says Barashith. Barashith means in beginnings. Now, there's a lot of beginnings. And one of the beginnings created God, the heavens and the earth. But a whole lot of stuff happened back here before God created the heavens and the earth. But now, if you want to go back to where nothing else but God existed, okay, that's this verse right here. Nothing else existed but God at all. In beginning, kept on being. That's third person singular, imperfect. And perfect tense, indicative mode, and active voice. Okay? And that comes from Amy, by the way. In beginning, kept on being that word logos is Jehovah. That's who it's talking about. My wife asked me the other day, where did God come from? Well, you remember that? Where did God come from? I had a guy come to my house the other day and they asked me, back there in eternity past, he wanted one of these charts. He says, back there when nothing else was, when it was just only God, where did God come from? Well, I'm just going to tell you something. God's God. That's it. Before anything was ever created, there was God. How long did God exist out there before He ever created anything? Well, it says right here, He kept on existing. forever, for a long time. We don't know when He created the first things, but He existed millennia before He created anything. All right? Because God always was. We can't even understand that, can we? Can you understand eternity? Brother John, you know how old you are, don't you?
Well, I've been told.
Yeah, you've been told how old you are. All right, you've been told how old you are. Brother David, you know how old you are? Brother Mike? Even my mom over there, she knows how old she is, but they had to tell her what her name was and when she was born, you know. Somebody had to tell us what her name was. And when we were born, because we didn't know very much back then. We're all like that. But you know what? There was a time when there was nothing but God, and He knew everything back then. He knew everything He was going to do in space and time, and He knew exactly how it was going to turn out over here in eternity future. Here we have eternity. How many of you got a wedding ring on? You know, they always said that it's a circle and it stands for eternity and all this stuff. Time, we live in time. The Greek word is chronos, all right, chronos. We had a word chronology from that chronograph. All of that comes from chronos, time. We only understand time. That's all we know. You know what a day is, don't you? All right. You know what 24 hours is? You know what an hour is? You know what a minute is? That's 60 seconds. We know these things, okay? Even the speed of light is not absolutely stable. It's 186,000 miles per second, but that's not really stable. They found out that's a little bit this way. But here's this eternal circle. Time is a marked out piece of eternity. It sure didn't stop eternity. When God marked out a piece of time, He didn't stop eternity. Do you know that? He didn't stop eternity. We live in space and time. He broke into space and time here. Right here. Now, He did walk with Adam in the garden, way back yonder. In space and time, He became flesh, John 1:14, and He dwelt among us. All of the history of mankind basically is 6,000 years. The history of man. That's all there is. That's all you can prove that man's been on this earth is 6,000 years. That's it. That's all the history of mankind. I mean, these evolutionists and a bunch of anthropologists and everything say man's been on here 1 million years, 2 million years, 3 million years. They have no proof of that at all. But we can prove that man's been here for 6,000 years. We can prove that. There's caves over there in Fish Lake Valley in the White Mountains where I used to live that we have seen occupations there, nearly 6,000 years of occupation. Mom, you remember when I took you up there at Cave Springs that time? And I mean like 20 feet deep was ashes. And then those ashes were arrowheads and bones that those Indians ate for the last 5,000 plus years. That's evidence. That's real evidence, isn't it? You can go back and you can dig down there and you can find those arrowheads that they shot those arrows, those animals with, and see bones from the animals that were there for 5,000 plus years. Almost 6,000 years of occupation. And there's one other place like that up there. You can go back there and see. The people were there. They lived in that area, okay? That goes back before God ever divided the earth. When the earth was Pangaea, all one piece of ground. That's what it was. But in space and time, God broke into space and time and became flesh to redeem us. So He could redeem His creation back to Himself so He could live in eternal bliss with it. Okay? It says, it has occurred, and He said, I am the Alpha. The Alpha, that's the Greek word for the first letter in the alphabet. That's Alpha. Okay. What's the Hebrew letter, the first Hebrew letter? In the Old Testament, it says, I am Aleph. All right? That's this word. By the way, it looks just like that in Greek. Just like it does in English. That's not real hard, is it? Now, in Hebrew, it's a little different. It looks like that. Okay? All right? That's what it looks like. And then he says, I am Omega. And Omega is like that. Okay? And in Hebrew, it is this. That's Tau. Okay? Tau. Aleph and Tau, and Alpha and Omega. The beginning and the end. He was here in eternity before anything else was. That's what he's saying. I'm the Eternal One. Exodus 3:14. In the Gospel of John, where Jesus told them, I am, before Abraham was, I am. He's the Eternal One. He's the Alpha. He's the Omega. He's the Eternal God. That's who He is. I am the Alpha and the Omega. The Arche. All right, the Arche. See that word Arche right there? That's it. That means head or beginning. All right. It says in one place that Jesus was the beginning of the creation of God. That's what it says in King James and some of the translations. In the Greek, it says He was the head of the creation of God. He is the head. He is the author of it. In Colossians, it tells us He was the author of the creation of God. In John, the first chapter, it tells us that He made all things, that nothing came into existence that was outside of Him. We know that. In Hebrew, it is like this. Rosh. Rosh. The word Barashith. In the first word in the Hebrew Bible, Barashith, Bara, Barashith. It comes from the word Rosh, which means head or beginning. Okay? Same word. Arche, the same thing. Archaeology. Our word archaeology comes out of that. What's arche mean, Brother Mike? Archaic, head, or beginning, long time ago. When you study archaeology, you're studying ancient things. I am the Ancient One. That's what he says. I am the Archaic. I am the beginning. And Telos. 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 That word Telos. That's it. We get a English word terminal out of that. Terminal. What's terminal? Relating to the end. That's what it means. Terminal means relating to the end. When you have a terminal illness, that means you're going to die. All right? There's a place down in Los Angeles down there called Terminal Island. That's the last island out there. That's the end. After that's ocean. Okay? The end. All right? I am the beginning and I am the end. Now, look at this little chart here that I drew out for you. See this circle with a marked off piece of time in it? That's time. That's chronos right there. That time didn't affect eternity at all. Look at this chart here. It's eternity here and eternity over here. Now here's all the things that happen in space and time. And here we are right here someplace. Right there. Now, God decided that He wanted to deal with mankind in the way that He has. This map says God's Bible map, God's plan of the ages. That's how He laid out the ages. Okay? And He did it for a purpose. God's eternal purpose, God's plan of the ages. Now, we've got a tribulation period coming upon us, don't we? It says that we're going to have a one-world government. We're going to have all these things, and guess what it is? When over in Europe, when they talk about the world news, it's called what? Anybody know what it's called? The one-world empire. What is the one-world empire? What is it all about? Where's the universal? What did George Bush bring in? What did he call it?
New World Order.
New World Order. Let's say, what's happening in the New World Order? He wasn't the one who invented it. He said it out. He was the first one to spoke it. It came about between his gums and his teeth, you know. One World Order. It's been in plan for a long time. It's been in plan since the book of Revelation was written. I mean, in was printed. When John printed out the book of Revelation, it says that we're going to have this one world order. It wasn't George Bush or anybody else. It has been laid out that way. And guess who's behind it? Who is the God of this age? Satan. He wants to bring everything under his control. And he thinks he's going to do it. One thing about old Satan, he's not omniscient. I'm going to tell you, he's got a lot of power and everything, but he is not omniscient. He doesn't know everything.
He knows he's going to lose, doesn't he?
I think he's narcissistic. I think he's so narcissistic that he just can't imagine that he's going to lose. He's going to lose, all right. We know that. But he's fighting like he's going to win, isn't he? Every day in our lives we have problems with him, don't we? Every day.
He knows the Bible's
there. He can quote the Bible. He quoted it to Jesus, didn't he? Way back yonder. All right, I am the beginning and I am the end. If anyone thirst, I shall give. All right, if anyone thirst, diphthonte. If anyone is thirsting, I shall give out of the fountain of the water of life in the wilderness. Now I don't know whether it's this next Sunday. Maybe it is. I don't remember how far into this walking the Bible lands it is. But when we get to that, you're going to see the wilderness. The wilderness where Israel walked for 40 years. There is nothing out in that wilderness to sustain life at all. Nothing. It's not there. They had some manna that came off of those tamarisk trees a little bit in certain times of the year, but God produced manna for millions of people. That place would have been had to be forested with tamarisk trees to do that, but God produced it. He just rained it. He brought the quail in there and he fed them with quail. He fed them with so much quail that made them sick. The thing about it is, out there in the wilderness, what God was trying to teach Israel was an eternal lesson that I will provide. I will provide. I'll do it. You're out there in a place where nothing can sustain you. You can't do it on your own. I don't care. You can have the best firearm out there in the world to hunt with. You can have the best seeds that you wanted to seed and farm. There's no water to farm. And they had animals out there. They had all this stuff. Who fed all of that? God did. It would not sustain life. It's just a little bit here and a little bit there, but not enough to sustain millions of people that were out there. He was trying to teach them to trust me. Trust me. Have you ever been to a place where only God can get you through? Huh? Only God? Have you ever been there? Sure. Where it took God to get you through? There's nothing in the world that man can do to keep you going. That's it. That's all you got. Just God. People, when they come to that point, they say, this is really neat. When they get to the point where there's nothing that anybody can do to save your life or anything else, and only God's going to do it, and God brings you through, you look back and he says, that was really neat. God did it. God did it. Really neat. He said, out of the fountain. Who was the rock that followed? Who was the rock that followed Israel? Who was the rock that followed Israel? Jesus was the rock. It was Jehovah. Jehovah is always referred to the rock, and the rock is the spring, the pigase, the spring. That's where the water came from that fed Israel, that watered Israel, that watered the land, that provided for them. One time they went to a place called Marah. What's Marah mean? The name Mary comes from that. Huh? Bitter. They went to the place called Mary, or Marah. And it was a bitter water. And they were griping and grumbling about that the water is not fit to drink. And Moses said, cut down this tree and throw in the water. And the water became sweet. God provided for that. 21 verse 7. Are you over there, Linda? All right. 21 and verse 21 and 7.
This is the eternal security problem.
This is not Revelation. Yeah.
Okay, 21 and verse 7.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Lamb's wives.
No?
21
7. You want to read that, Mike? Are you over there?
He who overcomes shall inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son.
Oh, the one conquering, the one overcoming, he shall be received by right of sonship. All right? The one conquering, he shall receive by right of sonship these things, and I shall be to him a God, and he shall be to me an heir. All right? Who's it talking about? Who's the only ones existing at this period of time over here? This tribulation period. Huh? The tribulation saints in Israel. That's the only ones that existed. Alright? And if they conquer, if they overcome, if they make it to the end, what's going to happen? They're going to get to go into the millennium. Alright? And then at the end of this period of time, there's going to be people that's going to live all the way to the end of the millennium. And what will they do if they live to the end? They have a decision to make there at the end, don't they? To follow the devil or follow God. It says that they'll have 100 years to be saved in their lives. The one conquering, the one overcoming, he shall receive by right of sonship. That word comes from klero and nomos. Kleros, that is the word for lot. Okay? Lot, and then it says lot law is what it says. He shall, third person singular, future indicative active, he shall receive. Lot law. All right, your name, the word name comes from the word onomos, or law. Okay? Onoma is name, and nomos is law. Your name is your name by law. All right? And by right and by law, that's your name. He shall receive by right of sonship these things, and I shall be to him a God, and he shall be to me an heir. An heir. An heir. That's the firstborn son. That's the one who shall inherit that family estate. Isn't that beautiful? Do you have problems with this verse, Brother Mike? Have you looked at this? You said...
Oh, I've got written down it's not about salvation.
No. It's talking about making it through these periods of time. You make it through those periods of time. First of all, if you get raptured up here, you're going to be up there with the Lord, aren't you? So you made it through that period of time. And then for the tribulation period, we have a period of 7 years, a period of trial. If there are people that's going to make it through that 7-year period of time, some of them are going to live. All right? Well, some of the Jews are. There's going to be at least 144,000 Jews going to make it to the end, aren't they? And there is another place in there where it said the bride has made herself ready. Now the bride, that's the bride. That's the churches of the Lord Jesus Christ. Not this saved people. Now this is the bride. It says the bride has made herself ready. That is in bridal relationship with the Lord. That's not the family of God. That is bridal relationship. Everybody that's born again in any churches anywhere are members of the family of God. But true New Testament churches are that which makes up the bride, okay? And that bride is a different entity than just the saved, all right? And we have those two entities out there, but it says the bride has made herself ready. How does she make herself ready? How does a bride make herself ready? This bride. How does a real bride make herself ready? In Israel, what was a bride supposed to do to make herself ready? What did she do? Did she remain faithful to her husband? Her spouse? If she was unfaithful to her husband, it's all off. If she wasn't faithful, there was no marriage. That was it. No marriage. If she wasn't faithful, there was no marriage. That's it. How else? What did she do? She listened, didn't she, for his call when he came? He would send his people ahead of time and say, I'm coming, so-and-so period of time, listen for me. And she was listening. When did he usually come? When did the groom usually come for the bride, according to biblical times? Weird. At midnight. At the middle of the night, he would come and call her name, and she would come out. And he would take her to her new quarters. All right? She has made herself ready. She would have all of her stuff ready to go. All of her dowry, everything would be ready to go. Ready. That's what the bride does. We looked at those. We looked at that. We studied that in the past. 21 and verse 8. 21 and verse 8. Shirley, are you over there?
Yes.
All right. 21 and verse 8.
But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, and idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death.
Well, there's some hard words right here, I'm going to tell you. This is some tough stuff. But the ones cowardly. What in the world do I mean cowardly? Delos. That's what the word comes from. Delos. The cowardly. Well, that's what it sounds like, but what is it? But what it means actually is reprobate. Reprobate. You know what reprobate? You know what apostate is? Reprobate, apostate. Now, how do you be apostate?
Fall back.
It doesn't mean you are part of the truth, but it means you have rejected the truth. You have rejected the truth. A reprobate is, if we talk about one that has denied the faith. They heard it. They heard the truth, but they denied it. The cowardly, let's just call them the reprobates. Okay? They have denied the truth. The reprobates won't be there. Okay? Those are ones that have denied the truth. If you don't believe in the person of Jesus Christ, that He is God, if you don't believe that and to believe that He died for your sins, you're not going to heaven. You're not going to get there. You're outside. You have reprobated yourself. You have denied the fact that God has come here to save you, and you won't trust in Him to do it. Religions have a lot of ways to God. And the problem with most religions in the world is false religions. The devil has found a lot of them, hasn't he? They somehow want to get around the person of Jesus Christ. They'll even name Him. The Muslims say that He was a prophet of God. That's not enough. The Jehovah's Witnesses say that He's like God. Almost.
They say He is a God.
Is a God. Yeah, a little God. Okay? He's a little God, but that's not enough. That's not going to get you to heaven. Many of the religions of the world, even the Buddhists, will say He was a great teacher. That's not going to get you to heaven. You can recognize Him as a good person. All the world realizes that Jesus was a good person in His time. Historically, He was really a person, wasn't He? I mean, we can't deny that He existed. The whole world knows that. But unless you believe in Him as your Savior and your God, the Creator, you're not going to get to heaven. You're out, all right? That's the word reprobate. If you don't believe that Jesus Christ is the God and Savior of you, you are not going to get to heaven. It says you're going to be in the lake of fire. Okay? That's it. And then it says, and the unbelieving ones. What is the unpardonable sin?
Dying in unbelief.
Dying in unbelief. That's the unpardonable sin. You're not going to be pardoned from that. You're not going to get another chance over there to believe. It's not going to happen. Unbelieving. Those without faith. And then it says here, and ebedeligmenois. Having become foul and vile and corrupt. All right? How do you become... Having been corrupted. How do you get corrupted? All you have to do is breathe the air of this world and you're corrupt. Just go just like Uncle Joe and so-and-so and Aunt Margaret and whatever. Just go like all of these different people out there. Just go the way of the flesh. Just go right like that and you will get to hell. That's how you get to hell. Just go act and become foul and perverted like the world and you're going to go to hell. What do you have to do to get into hell? Nothing. Nothing. What you have to do is reject Christ. You have to reject Christ. All right. And then it says, murderers. Murderers. Public enemies. People that commit murder. That there are people out here that like to kill people? That's a thrill. They want to kill people. Strangle them, shoot them, cut them, whatever. They want to kill people. They want to torture people. That's what they like to do. It says here that these manslayers are not going to make it into heaven. I went to a shooting class the other day, and the guy that was teaching the shooting class is a believer. And he said, I'm going to tell you what, the Jews know the difference between murder and protection, warring. When you're protecting yourself or your family, that's not murder. That's you're protecting. The word for murder in the Old Testament was to kill, to inflict death for no purpose. You just want to go kill somebody. All right? This is murderers. And Jesus, when he was on the cross, they said that there was a murderer on the right and a murderer on the left. Those were not just thieves. Those are murderers. Okay? These are murderers. There was a murderer on his right and a murderer on his left. And one of those murderers got to go to heaven. So even though he was a murderer, evidently he repented. He said, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And what did Jesus say to him? Today you shall be with me in paradise. Okay? So that murderer got to go. All right? But if you don't repent of that, then you go to hell. And then it says, pornois. Okay, pornois. What does that word say there in your translation?
Sexually immoral.
Sexually immoral. What do you have to do to be sexually immoral? This word here is really a polished word. A polished word. This is a prostitute. This is sex for hire. This is pornography. This is what they have in these shows where the women get up and dance and the men get up and dance and pull their clothes off. This is that. That's it. What's going to happen to them? Where do they go? To hell. Why do they do that? Why would they prostitute themselves? What's the purpose behind it?
Money.
Money. Now, if you're a beautiful girl or a nice-looking man, you can get up and you can model yourself in front of these people and they will pay to watch you. And they will pay to go to bed with you. These are all the things that they do. God didn't make you good-looking men and good-looking women for anybody else but your husband. That's all. There is a desire and attraction there between a man and a woman. Yes, there is. But that is for the mate. That's you find the mate. You don't give that to anybody else but the mate. That's who it's for. You do that. Anything outside of that is what? Fornication. And it's wrong. All right, so we covered that. Sex for hire. God ordained sex. God gave the sensual desires in your bodies as pleasure, but is in pleasure in marriage, within boundaries. Then it says, and the ones drug addicts, the ones pharmacist. That's what it literally says, pharmakia. The pharmacy is from this word. What it's talking about is drugs. What is a drug? What is drugs? What is drugs? What's the drugs it's talking about here? Alcohol? Is alcohol a drug? Yeah, alcohol is a drug. How about marijuana? How about cocaine? Opium? You know, these drugs have been used for a long, long time by these people. They were using them back in the days before Jesus was ever on this earth. They were using them in religious services. They would get all drugged up in religious services so they could experience something more. I remember the writings and the stories of the American Indian people. When the white man, they didn't have any alcohol on this continent, by the way. Didn't have any alcohol. Indians would go out and seek the person of God, and they would really pay attention. They would go on fast. They'd do all kinds of stuff. Sometimes they'd bury themselves in the ground, listening for the person of God, wanting to know what God wanted them to do. And when the white man came over here, it gave them a bottle of whiskey. And they drank this, and they felt like they were in some spiritual world. The spirit world. All right? And that's what the medicine men called cheap religion. And they realized, he said, that's not of God, that's of the devil. Why, a drunk. What is a... we had some drunks in my family. Didn't we, Mama, did we ever have any drunks in our family? Huh? I knew two of them there, Bill and Bob, that was drunk for 50 years at least. I imagine at least 50 years, weren't they? Probably drunk. They did. You know what they thought about when they went to bed? The last drink. The first thing they got up in the morning, you know what they thought about? The next drink. That's all they cared about. That was it. That totally replaces the person of God, doesn't it? And the whiskey, the alcohol, the wino, the wine, their drugs become their God. The drugs become the God. What about these people over here, these pornographers? The sex and the power and the excitement become their God. Doesn't it? So what are they doing? They're replacing God. The drug addicts. They're not going to get there either. Then it says, and the idolaters. Now what is idolatry? What is idolatry? Bowing down and worshiping false gods. You're not going to get there. Religion won't get you to heaven. Religion will get you to hell. Only God's going to get you to heaven. Religion will get you into hell faster than anything else. Bad religion. All right? Religion. I've said this 1,000 times. Some of you probably get tired of it. Some of you haven't heard it, and especially out there in the radio world and the internet world. Religion. There it is, right there. Religion. That's the prefix, that's the root, and that's the suffix. Okay? In a word. You know all about that. A prefix is something that goes before and tells you something about the word. And pre, and it means, re means again. All right? And the word leg there, religion, the word leg, that's where we get our word ligament from, and it comes from the Latin ligare, which means to bind or to tie. Your arm. Just go like this, everybody. Go like that with your arm. You know what makes your... Brother Mike, now get your arm out there. What's making your arm do that? It's ligaments. It's binding. Your arm, your muscles are bound to this bone and to that bone here, and it's, you're moving it. The bind, it's bound, all right? And then ION means the act of. The act of binding back again. That's what religion is supposed to do. Man gets unbound from God. Man is unbound from God because he's a son of Adam. Okay? A son of Adam. And religion is supposed to bind you back to God. Bind you back to God. But false religion will bind you away from God. it will keep you from coming to God. For instance, we were talking about earlier, those that have denied, the reprobates. If you don't believe, if religion doesn't believe that Jesus Christ is God in the flesh, that is our only avenue into heaven, if you don't believe that, what happens? If your religion teaches that He is not, and adamantly teaches that Jesus Christ is not the Messiah and Jesus Christ is not God, what does it do to you? It binds you away from God. Unless you lay it down, you're not going to get there. Because you are reprobate, delios. All right? You're reprobate. Idolaters, idolatry. False religion is idolatry. False religion is idolatry. And then it says, and all of the liars. Who's the father of all liars? Satan. All right? When you lie, you imitate Satan. All right? And all liars will have their part, their meros, their share, their inheritance. In heaven, there is degrees of glory. Is there not? Then there are degrees of glory in heaven. How about hell? In hell, there are degrees of damnation. And it says, each one of these people, according to how... Now, you want to be judged. Last week, we talked about being judged according to works. If you're going to hell, you're going to be judged according to your works. I think people that are good people in false religions are going to be in a hot place in hell. Because they're reprobates. They have denied and they have thought. What is a person in false religion? What about a spiritual leader in false religion? What do you think they're going to be in a hot place in hell? How many people they got? I think Charles Sayes Russell, Joseph Smith is going to be in a hot spot. I mean, if there's going to flames are going to be burning real hard there, I think those people are going to be in the hottest spot, because how many people have they damned with their doctrines? Damnable heresies, Paul says. Damnable heresies. Damned people. Liars. That's the liars. Okay. And they will have their meros, their part, their share, their inheritance, sow to the wind and reap the what? Whirlwind. And the lake, the one burning with theou, the one burning with sulfur, which is the death, the second death. All Hades and all of the liars and all the pornographers and all of the rejecters of God will be in the lake of fire forever and ever. And there is no way out of it, is there? How important it is for people to be saved now. You're not going to get a chance to get saved later. You're not going to be born again. There's people, I mean, this new world, this what they call New Age religion. You got people migrating. You live and you die. One time you're a cow, the next time you're a goat, the next time you're a flea or whatever. Well, it's the same as that old stuff that they had, the Buddhism and everything else. Just one time after another, you have a chance in life. And if you were real bad, you're a flea this time. That's the way they believe. And then you might have lived 1,000 years ago as Eric the Red or Christopher Columbus or something, you know. And they are able to talk in those languages in their sleep and stuff. I guarantee you one thing. If you're talking in some other language in your sleep, you're by the power of Satan, to some other spirit. Now 21 and verse 9. We'll look at this verse here and then I'll turn you loose on the world, okay? Go out there and do something with it. 21 and verse 9. Brother John.
And one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me, saying, come here, I shall show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb.
All right, come here and I'll show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. That's where you were going a while ago, wasn't it, sir? Something like that. Come out, one of the angels, having the seven bowls, the vials, the ones with the plagues, the last plagues, and he spoke with me, saying, come, and I'll point out to you the bride, the nymphane. That's a funny word, nymphane. We got a word that people use, okay, nymphomania. You ever heard of that term? That came right out of this word. What in the world does this bride mean? What's this word, bride? Nymphane. The wife of the Lamb. You go back and you chase this word. Back in the Bible days, when these words were invented, women, the word for bride here, this actually is the word for bridal bed. Bridal bed. That's what the term is. The bridal bed. This is the bedroom. And a bride always wanted to get her husband into the bridal bed. It was very important because she wanted to have children. She wanted to have children. Okay? And if she didn't have children, guess what happens when they're in her old age? She's going to starve to death if she didn't have children. And a woman that was really aggressive to her husband to keep her in the bridal chamber, she was called a nymphomania. All right? She kept him in the bed all the time. That's the term. That's where this term came from. That's where the term came from. Back in the days of Jacob, look at Jacob. His wives were fighting over him, weren't they? Because they wanted him to give them children. Give them children. That's the term. That's where this term originated. Now you know that, see? Whether you need it or not. The bride. I'm going to show you the bride. Next week we're going to look at the bride. 21 and verse 10. 21 and verse 10. Well, we can look at that if you want to. You want to look at that? Brother David, you want to read that for me real quick, and then we'll turn you loose.
And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me the great city of the Holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God.
All right, now here we have this beautiful city. Next week we're going to get into this, and we're going to study the dimensions of the city. And this thing that I gave to you here, this is very important for next week. Bring this next week, and we'll look at that. Not only that, but also I'm going to hand this out to you. You're going to find out that this city, there's going to be some tribes around it, the tribes of Israel around this city and the different gates. All right? And have you got one of these?
No.
All right. I think you have one of these. All of you have one of these. John, do you have one of these?
I think so, yeah.
All right. Shirley? All right. David, you have one? Mike, I know you have
one. We don't have that other one.
Oh, you don't have. Oh, that's right. You weren't here a while ago.
They were late.
All right, so we'll study about New Jerusalem next week. We're going to study about the city, how big it is, and everything else. And what does basically theology say about New Jerusalem? All right, what does it say about New Jerusalem? How big is it? Huh? We're going to find out it's really not 1,500 square miles. Next week, we're going to find that out. All right? We're going to find out how big it really is. We're going to find out how big it really is. Everybody says it's 1,500 square miles, but we're going to figure out how really big it is. And how many square miles there is in that city, and how many square feet, and how many floors are in that city. Okay? That's what we're going to study next week. What day of the month is this? 13th. All right. Sunday the 13th, huh? At least it's not Friday the 13th, huh? All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed the study of God's Word with us. And next week we're going to get into a